Thank you, everybody, for coming and listening to me speak here. My name is Jonathan Montgomery. I am a recent graduate of the PhD program in plant biology from the University of California, Riverside. I see my lovely lab is here, as well as my PI, Dr. McGiffin, there in the corner. So thank you especially. All right, let's get started here. I work with turf grass primarily, and the McGiffin lab focuses a lot on biochar. I'm looking at biochar primarily to convey some water savings here. Therefore, the title of my presentation is The Importance of Irrigation Scheduling for Water Savings with Turf Grass Grown in Amended Soils. Here we are. So I haven't seen a lot of turf grass talks here. That kind of varies over different ASHS conferences, you know. So I thought I'd start with a little bit of turf grass background, right? Usually, you go through a city, you see, or an agricultural area, you see a large field, say corn, something like that. It's easy to imagine how much water that would take, right? It's a lot of space. But when you see a city, you see small isolated patches of turf grass. And when you combine all of these small patches of turf grass, you can see that they make up as much as 25% of land in some urban areas. And in a lot of metropolitan water districts, as much as 70% of municipal water use can be used in irrigating all of this turf grass. So many people see turf grass as an unnecessary luxury sort of plant to grow, right? We all know it's aesthetically pleasing. We all know you can play a game of croquet on it, right? We all know that there are golf courses which the elite like to use, right? But I would like to try to convince all of you that turf grass should in fact not be the first target of water use reduction policies, because it provides us with many benefits. This brings us to turf services. So, some standard benefits which we accept from turf are reduced erosion rates, right? So I've got a plan along all of our roadsides. Also, a protection of surface water quality. The shallow fibrous roots of turf are very good at intercepting contaminants and preventing also the runoff or percolation of water through the soil profile, which is then lost. You can have hydraulic lift of soil, of irrigation water, maintaining it at the surface of the soil. A lot of benefits here, including reduction in heat and reduction in the risk of fires. Fantastic. So if we reduce water availability for turf, the turf becomes less healthy, and it can't give us as much as it potentially could. So moving on. You'll see that in California, where I am from, especially in Southern California, we've gone through some phases of tremendous drought. This is back in 2014, and the U.S. Drought Monitor, and this is kind of ridiculous. Now, the situation has gotten a little bit better, okay, in 2018. However, the region around Riverside County, which is the rectangular portion right there at the bottom of the state, the situation there never gets that good, right, especially for turf grass. And there are a few strategies commonly recommended to reduce irrigation requirements on turf. Standard one, least popular one among turf grass researchers, I believe, is the use of artificial turf. Because all those great benefits I talked about earlier, having a bunch of plastic on your lawn doesn't give you any of that, all right? Artificial turf has a lot of issues with it, though it definitely has its applications, right? I don't want to anger anybody in that industry who may be around. So, you can reduce the area under irrigation, but that's also going to reduce your benefits. You can use recycled or impaired water, and once again, those benefits are going to be reduced, especially with something like, say, salt accumulation in the soil profile, right? You can use warm season turf grass species, which use the an alternate method of photosynthesis or an alternate pathway for photosynthesis. And these do require less water in the summer, but they go through a period of winter dormancy. And people don't want to deal with a yellow lawn for multiple months out of the year. So, moving a little bit forward, skipping over those last two, I focus on the modification of the soil structure. Because a lot of water is lost through percolation of the soil profile, right, or inability of the water to infiltrate through the soil surface, which is then lost as runoff. If we can modify a soil structure, we can possibly improve the water use efficiency of a plant. It's not too mind-blowing right there. Now, this brings us to biochar. which thankfully has been getting a lot more attention over the past decade, I'd say. You might have seen some members of my lab presenting posters or presentations about biochar, and one of the great things they try to advertise with it is that you can hold a lot of water in the soil. Okay, this is where the first point I have there comes into play. That is improved moisture dynamics. Now, biochar, they also claim that it can improve nutrient retention. There's microbial impacts, which my lab mate has presented on earlier, and more plant microbe synergisms. My apologies. But let's talk a little bit about what biochar exactly is. Okay, so you take some organic matter, right? Wood, coconut shells, lawn clippings, a lot of things. You can use cardboard as one feedstock that's used. A lot of things can be used to create biochar. If you look at that diagram on the right, you take the plant matter. It goes through this pyrolysis process. Pyrolysis is basically heating without oxygen being present, and this results in the majority of the carbon, or about 50% of the carbon that was present there, being locked into these carbon rings. And then this form of carbon is very recalcitrant. You can think about it sort of as a charcoal, right? Except with a lot of charcoals, they have intermediate compounds between the carbon rings and the initial carbon compounds that you've got at the beginning, which can be harmful. Okay, the great thing about biochar is that this carbon, which is now trapped in the biochar product, this is going to stay in the soil for hundreds of thousands of years. It's a standard company line, right? And research has borne that out at least as long as we can conduct these studies. So this is a great way to mitigate climate change, which is really what attracted me to this product in the beginning. Grow a bunch of plants, grow a bunch of trees, pyrolyze them, take the biochar, incorporate it into the soil, right? And it's going to stay there. It's not going to be broken down. This is in stark contrast to the other product that we're looking at in my research, which is compost products. Compost products are broken down by microbial activity. Greenhouse gases are emitted. And while they do allow you to use an organic source of fertilizer, they do have this additional detriment. Great. So, taking us all the way back to about 5 years ago when I started doing work with biochar here, I did a field and greenhouse study looking at biochar and compost and water use efficiency in tall fescue. This is a picture from the greenhouse portion of my study. And here's what's interesting, right? You look at this picture, and this was a consistent pattern. I have data to back it up, but I also only have 15 minutes, right? So, you can clearly see impacts of our amendments. The 10% biochar amendment, I'm sorry, that's 10 tons per acre of biochar, the fourth pot over there, is slightly greener than our control on the far left. Our highest rate of green waste compost retained its color a lot better. And if you look immediately to the right of 4GW, which is 4 inches of green waste, you can see 2 inches of green waste compost and 5 tons per acre biochar. That's the rate that we were using there. And that combined amendment, that combined treatment, really seemed to show us some benefits. But all this only came about after we'd done the complete 2-year study and found no improvement in turf grass performance under reduced irrigation. So this got me really thinking, what's going on here? And I spoke with a soil scientist on campus and also one of the big names in biochar about what could potentially be happening here. Because this looks like drought tolerance to me. And I believe the real issue comes down to irrigation scheduling. And I will try to convince you a little bit of that over the next few slides. So as I said before, our results showed no improved performance under reduced irrigation. However, we were applying this irrigation on 3-day increments and just applying either 80% or 50% of ET replacement. Once we withheld irrigation completely, green color was maintained in the pots amended with biochars and with some rates of biochar and some combined compost and biochar amendments. So, I did another greenhouse study, and I looked to see if, in fact, our biochar product was holding more water. This is gravimetric water content, so it's straightforward, it's way in the pots, right? You really can't blame any equipment malfunctions for this sort of data. And, in fact, our highest rate of 10% biochar in this case maintained a greater water quantity at the beginning here, higher water holding capacity, and then it lost that water at a nice consistent rate with the others, but over the entire course of this dry down curve, the water content of amended pots was higher than that of our controls. The blue line you can track all the way at the bottom there, that's our control. Okay? And we also have some data with this, oh, thank you, with this turf rescue product, which is a combined amendment of 70% compost, 30% biochar. Very similar pattern, except it looks like we may have overdone it with 20% of the turf rescue product. So there we go. Now we've shown that the soil can hold more water. So why aren't the plants performing better when we irrigate them less? So I moved on to an irrigation regime where rather than irrigating with different quantities the same day, we were irrigating only at signs of wilt. And over a brief period, this data shows you the amount of irrigation required in the greenhouse to maintain acceptable turf quality. And that is a quality based on the National Turf Evaluation Program standards that is above 6, a scale of 1 to 9. You can see major reductions. Now, you'll also note that this period is not that long and there's a missing chunk in the middle. This is why I'm doing a new study right now. We had some issues with curation of data, let's say. All right. Still, I am willing to go to bat for these results. You can see that turf was maintained at an acceptable quality with a lot less water there. All right, this is our biochar treatments right there over time. And, yeah, at every date, you seem to have a lot less water required by the higher biochar treatment, by the higher biochar rates. Okay, turf rescue, that's the combined biochar and compost product, mirrors the results, basically. So now we're seeing reduced irrigation required. And this translates directly into savings for the golf courses, the homeowners, the sports fields, whoever's willing to incorporate this product into their soil in which they will be growing turf. These are results from our last round of research. I was hoping to be a little further into this study when this conference came about, but we all know how that scheduling goes. However, once again, we are seeing, let me zoom in on the beginning of the dry down curves. We are seeing improvement with most of our amendments. All right, the control is that lowest line. And on a couple of days closer to the end of the dry down curve, it does begin to resemble a similar gravimetric water content to some of our amendments. But especially that combined biochar and compost amendment right there, looks like it's holding a lot more water. Let me see what I've got here. We also installed watermark sensors to collect soil water potential, right? And this was interesting to us as well. The differences that we saw here were nowhere near as consistent as those in gravimetric water content. This is also a big question with biochar, because many people will tell you that this sort of equipment will not work in soils amended with high amounts, high rates of biochar. Why this is, we're really having a hard time getting to an answer there. But we hope to get closer and closer. Now, as I move forward with the study, I'll be irrigating at every sign of wilt, which we'll be assessing via the recovery. You know, you pinch the leaf and it recovers its turgor pressure. And we'll be tracking how much water we apply to each amended pot. And with any luck, we'll get a similar result as to what we got before. But let's see here. Yeah. But we've got some interesting findings, some confusing findings, but that means questions, and questions mean that there are answers to be found, which is what we need, you know? I've described, I think, all these points pretty well, as best I can, at least, and I'd be more than happy to take some questions after thanking once again all of you for coming here and the members of the McGiffin Lab. Thank you very much. Yes?
Soil moisture, one thing that might help is converting it to volumetric instead of gravimetric.
Yeah.
Maybe for publication that might help as mm-hmm. well. And it might also help with some of the discrepancy between the soil water potential and the. Because usually, like when you pressure volume curves, mm-hmm. it's always volumetric water content.
Yeah. Not absolutely. And we collaborate with a U.S. salinity lab on campus. They have samples of a lot of the soil, and we're waiting on pressure plate results and things like this, and to give us a nice, more complete picture. No, we don't. They'll be analyzing that as well. We're kind of hitting a dead end there, yeah, with that. It's unfortunate. I'm sorry I don't have a better answer for you there.
I have just a couple quick questions. What type of turfgrass species were you looking at?
Tall fescue.
Tall fescue.
Yeah.
How did you ever see any toxicity from biochar on the grass?
Actually, we didn't find any toxicity from the biochar. The biochar always performed at comparable rates to our controls, but we did use a biosolids compost. And this biosolids compost was not quite mature, and we found a negative impact from that on turfgrass establishment and performance over 3 years. When we incorporated a rate of biochar with that, we were able to almost rescue, or pretend, or possibly rescue, partially rescue, that phenotype, that damage. So that's something to look at.